This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, the American way. Tom Hartman here with you and broadcasting live today and tomorrow from Washington, D.C., from the Omni Shoreham Hotel, where the Conservative Political Action Conference, the largest conservative annual get-together and boogie-down party, is held. We may have, I understand, several of the presidential, or the, I guess, the two presidential. Everybody's ignoring Huckabee. I don't know if he's coming through or not, but basically I heard that John McCain and Mitt Romney will be wandering through here at some point, perhaps while we're on the air. One of the stories I heard was that Mitt Romney would be after 3, so we might miss him, but we'll see. And we're going to be having a number of people on the program dropping by. We'll be taking your calls throughout the program. A lot of news today. There's a lot of things going on in the world as well that we will be getting to. But I want to start out with John Felmy. He's here with us. He is the chief economist with the American Petroleum Institute. And Dr. John Felmy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And the website, api.org, as one might guess with American Petroleum Institute. John, you guys are out. You have launched an aggressive education campaign, and I've looked over your stats, and one of the things that we will agree on is that Americans are mind-bogglingly misinformed about a whole variety of things that have to do with energy, and so you've launched an education campaign around that. You want to give us the gist of that?
Well, what we found in terms of our research is that we've asked people, you know, some real fundamental facts in the industry, like where does our petroleum, for example, come from? I'll bet if you ask 100 people walking by your station here today what country is the largest supplier, 60% would probably say Saudi Arabia, when in fact it's Canada.
To the United States.
Right. Other things are...
And Mexico's number two, isn't it?
It bounces between 2 and 3, but it's in the top 3. The next thing is, for example, what types of energy do we use? You know, we get 40% from oil, 23% gas, 23% coal, 8% nuclear. And then when you talk about renewables, you get about 3% for hydro. And so when you finally get down to the renewables that everybody talks about, solar, wind, geothermal, ethanol, it's less than 2%. And when you ask people, they really don't have even a close idea on it. And so what we found is this is unfortunate because, you know, our elected representatives are talking to their constituents, and unfortunately the constituents are not fully informed, and so we are concerned about bad policies coming about.
You need to get right on top of these microphones, by the way. Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, on the floor of the Senate a couple days ago, said since 2001, big oil has earned more than $500 billion in profits, but devoted less than a penny per gallon to produce clean, affordable fuels.
Well, I don't think that's factually correct. If you look at the amount that the industry has spent on emerging energy, say, between 2000 and 2005, it was close to $100 billion. Now, a large share of that was on advanced hydrocarbons like oil shale, oil sands, liquefied natural gas.
Which really just liquids. fancy ways of getting more oil out of different kinds of rock.
Absolutely. But they've also invested in solar, wind, geothermal, advanced ethanol in the sense of cellulosic ethanol and so on. So, you know, we can always talk about figures, but the point is that whatever they invest, they've got to supply their customers to keep gas flowing 24/7. So that's gasoline and oil right now. And looking to the future, they're investing in these other things.
I'm seeing where AAA, perhaps a little bit off topic here, but AAA today released a report suggesting that the price of gasoline may drop as much as 50 cents this year. And two theories about this. One, that we're going into a recession, and so the decrease in demand and the increased supply is going to drop the price of gas and oil. One conspiracy theory around that, George Bush was over in Saudi Arabia the other day jawboning the Saudis, and apparently production has been jacked up among the OPEC countries, particularly the Middle Eastern ones. Or three, that the oil companies seem to do a really great job of dropping gas prices just before elections when Republicans are at risk. Is there an unholy alliance between big oil and the Republican Party?
Well, I have the philosophy that you either believe in conspiracy or markets. And
Why not both?
Well, the conspiracy...
OPEC is a cartel. It's not a free market. There is no free market in oil.
Absolutely. And facts are very clear that OPEC had reduced their production of oil year over year by the equivalent of a million barrels a day until recently. Now, you have had some increases in output, but that's markets. If you have $100 oil, anybody who can supply oil is going to do it, so it's not surprising.
But if you're part of a cartel and you do that, then they can bust your chops.
Well, it's called cheating, and that's why cartels tend to fail. So if you look at what's going to happen with the future, you've got to say, well, what's going to happen with supply? And we've had problems with supply around the globe, Venezuela, Nigeria, Iraq. Sure. You've got to ask what's happening to demand, which, of course, as you mentioned, is going to be influenced by the economy and the weather. We've been fortunate with a relatively mild winter so far, so we'll see what happens for the residual of the winter. And that comes together, and you get a crude price. And the crude price is a most important component of the cost of producing gasoline. Now, if you want to then talk about what's going to happen to that.
If I could just, when Bush came into office, the price of crude was, what, around $26, $28 a barrel, as I recall? This was in 2001?
Well, at the end of the Clinton administration in September of 2000, it was actually $37.
Okay, $37. So, and now it's flirting with $90 pretty regularly, mm-hmm. and it's touched $100. What accounts for that roughly tripling of the price of oil in a period of 6 years? I don't recall that ever happening in my lifetime, and I'm an old fart.
Well, actually, if you go back to the late 70s.
Well, actually, 70s, in the 70s,
right.
Yeah,
because
there was a spike, but that was because the Arabs just turned off the spigot because we supported Israel in the war in 72.
Well, actually, it was more of a supply impact because just the cartel, the boycott itself, really didn't do that much to world supplies because it just moved oil around the globe. But the Iranian revolution did have a huge hit in terms of supplies. You took over 5 million barrels a day off the market, and that was a supply impact. Now, what's happening now is strong demand from China, other parts of the world, and weak supply. You've had demand up and supply down, and so prices go up as a result. Now, why do they go up more? Well, it's because markets are so tight, we have limited excess capacity, so even small movements in supply or demand can lead to a more than proportional impact on price.
Right. Yesterday, the oil companies made 667 bids for 448 tracts in the 29 million acre area up in Alaska that's the epicenter of the polar bear habitat near Point Barrow. And the winning bids, more than a record-breaking $105 million. Shell, for example, the 3x3 mile leasehold, almost twice as high as any previous bid in history. Many countries around the world are starting to say, hey, wait a minute, this oil on public lands is our property, and we will sell it to you. In other words, this is what has happened in Mexico. It's what's happening increasingly in Russia, we're seeing. It's what has happened over the last 50, 60 years in almost all of the Middle Eastern countries. It's what Chavez did in Venezuela. At what point, how do you think the oil companies would push back if the American people were to say, okay, you're going to take our oil out of our ground, out of our public territories. You're not going to take it 5 cents on the dollar or 10 cents on the dollar. You're going to take it 80 cents on the dollar or 90 cents on the dollar like the Saudis do.
Well, the thing about that is, first of all, you've got to be realistic about what royalties are already paid. You had royalties increase both in the U.S. in terms of their federal royalty offshore rates. You've also had royalties increase, for example, in Alaska substantially.
But they're still very low. I mean, ExxonMobil just made more profit than any corporation in the history of human civilization.
Yeah, but if you put that in perspective, it was 10 cents in a dollar. So you've got to be realistic about how much earnings you're actually going to get for that. And if you try to adopt something that is a national approach, well, you're not going to have enough returns from the companies involved to be able to make the investment. So effectively, you would be choking the industry. And that's what we're seeing in Mexico. That's what we're seeing in Venezuela. And who knows what will happen with the rest of these other countries.
Well, what if we were to take that money, since the oil companies apparently aren't, and say, okay, we're gonna take the money from that revenue, the revenue from the sale of that oil, and invest it directly into the development of decentralized solar technology, wind technology, wave technology, and other technologies that the oil companies are flirting with, but aren't really fully jumping into.
Well, we're in the business of supplying energy that's needed now, and wishful thinking won't get you there. We're investing. Well, yeah, you can, and you can have people sitting in the cold dark. So the key thing is you have to be able to supply current customers, and that requires investment. So the companies, for example, are investing more in conventional oil and gas than what they earn in terms of net income. And I mentioned to you the alternative investments they're making. So we think they're doing it in a prudent way. Now, of course, you can continue to expand, but it's going to be a function of these new technologies developing, and they're not available right now. So one has to look at this from a balanced approach, because you've got to keep consumer supply.
I would say they are available. I mean, we do have, you know, wind power and solar power are now competitive with oil or gas. It's a matter of availability and distribution. They're not out there, but the technologies, you can buy them and put them up.
Wind, solar, geothermal, ethanol, the darlings of this stuff.
Let's take ethanol out of that equation.
Well, okay, wind, solar, geothermal, you're talking about 1% of our energy supplies. So you've got to be very realistic about how you're going to be able to expand that and meet the needs of consumers. Because you can't leave people in the dark.
Yes, well said. John Felmy, Dr. John Felmy, he's the chief economist for the American Petroleum Institute, API.org. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
A dream is still alive. Someday will come true. And this country, it belongs to folks like me and you. So let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our country.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, 21 minutes past the hour. And the buzz here at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C., the CPAC conference, that I'm hearing, the kind of background quiet buzz, is that Mitt Romney may today here at CPAC be announcing that he's pulling out of the race. And it's interesting because last year I was here and there were Romney people everywhere. I mean, there were thousands. You couldn't walk down the aisle without literally 40, 50 in a row of these well-scrubbed, perfectly coiffed, you know, pink-faced, well-dressed young men and women all holding Romney signs and passing out. This morning, there was one. There was one. There were about 20 guys from McCain. So I this is just putting my finger to the wind, but I suspect Mitt Romney's going to pull out, and I suspect he's going to do it today. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton has loaned her own campaign $5 million of her own money. This is big news on the Democratic side. Speaking of news, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us from Washington, D.C., where I am. Hey, Ellen.
Well, you know, it's interesting because last year they also gave out those very, very thin kinds of flip-flops that you get when you get your nails done, and they all had different flip-flops of Romney. I actually am saving them, and I'm going to make a mobile out of them because I think this is one of the greatest pieces of political something that's ever been sent.
Yeah, I think that was either the Tancredo or the Hunter campaign that was passing those things out, one of those guys.
Nobody would take responsibility, but yes, absolutely. And we heard it was Tancredo more than Hunter, but... the other thing that's interesting is that Hillary Clinton claims to have raised $4 million online in 24 hours, which would beat Obama's raising online, but of course not Obama's overall raise. The other thing is the Hillary Clinton campaign today is going to have a press briefer with the various Hispanic members, including the senator from New Jersey, and her campaign manager, who's Hispanic, and talking about how they are going to reach out to the Hispanic vote.
At the same time, the Obama campaign is doing that as well. I'll have to get those details a little later, but big press now. The Hispanic vote seems to be a potential major swing vote in the Democratic coalition.
That's right. The other thing that's going on is Mukasey's testimony before the House Judiciary today. He actually, I was not there, but in the pre-released testimony, he said that he's very worried about the new sentencing guidelines on crack cocaine dealers. He said they may release as many as 1,600. They're violent. They shouldn't be released. Of course, this is the most racist thing in the universe. Mm. But what, of course, he didn't say is that the judges are going to hear the cases, each case, in terms of a petition for release early under the sentencing guideline change.
Right.
So it's not like you're going to be releasing these horrible people into the streets without a judge reviewing it.
Right. Which is the process. I mean, yeah, this is, we are still suffering as a nation from the consequences of the Rockefeller, what started as the Rockefeller drug laws in New York and became the so-called war on drugs. And what it has actually been is largely a war on African Americans and a war on poor people. But that's a whole other rant.
A couple other interesting things are that President Bush today was talking about his stalled nominations. He went through the whole litany, three FEC people. I said that the Federal Reserve has three nominations pending. And, of course, the issue is, and then, of course, the two nominations to the Justice Department, and one of them is famous for the torture memo. And the issue is, of course, if they push some of these nominations through, these are going to go into the next president. Yeah. Schumer is saying that this is just a bogus issue and that this is, again, just the president trying to ram his people through before he leaves office.
Yeah, absolutely. In many cases, lifetime appointments as well, or long-term appointments. By the way, Ellen, the dolphin just walked by. The guy in the gray dolphin suit and he's wearing a T-shirt that says, I'm just a flip-flopper from Massachusetts.
Exactly. He was there last year, too.
Yeah, he just walked by. So I guess it wasn't the Tancredo campaign.
As you know, Cheney spoke there this morning, got a standing ovation when he said, in terms of the CIA program, which, of course, the White House just admitted that they do waterboarding, that the CIA program is tougher for tougher customers. He got a standing ovation on that one.
Here at CPAC?
I'm sorry?
Here at CPAC this morning?
At CPAC this morning.
Yeah, I missed that.
He also was talking about the FISA bill. He said those who act in good faith should not be punished by trial and lawsuits. Of course, Quest Communications was the one telecommunications company that, in my opinion, acted in good faith and didn't allow the government to just wholesale tap their lines.
Right, and then the government discovered that their CEO had done something wrong, and now he's in jail.
Well, of course, you wonder why. It's sort of the Bob Ney theory of justice.
Yeah.
And for all the conspiracy theorists out there, the absence of another 9/11 is not an accident.
Oh, Dick Cheney said that?
Dick Cheney said that. Of course, at 3:00 today Eastern Time, we'll be hearing from McCain. Get your popcorn out. That's going to be good as he bends to the conservatives. Yeah. And then, of course, tomorrow morning, the president before he goes to Tennessee.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Ellen Ratner, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Tom Hartman here with you live from CPAC. TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Lonely feeling.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and I've gotten two semi-confirmations that Mitt Romney, I'm not sure if he's speaking right now or not, but somebody is, and there's a whole bunch of people down at the monitors, but he's supposed to be speaking any second now that he has, in fact, bailed out, that he is pulling out. So, interesting. So now the conservatives here at the Conservative Political Action Conference, and keep in mind, this is not a Republican Party event. This is a movement event. This is the epicenter of the conservative movement, you know, going all the way back to the 60s after Goldwater went down in flames. The conservatives here are going to have to make a decision. They're going to swallow hard and decide whether they're going to get with the program and elect a Republican, that being John McCain, or whether they're going to go their own way. And, you know, hope for another day. And it's going to be real interesting. I have with me Carl Abrams. Carl is the general manager of WSRO, AM 650, in Framingham, Mass.
That's correct.
And Carl, you're also engineering the Radio Row here. We met and got to know each other last year. You've been a great help. But I wanted to get you on for two reasons. First of all, I'm just curious. I mean, you do the CPAC conference here. You know all these guys.
Sure do.
What are they going to do without Mitt Romney?
I don't know. You know, it was, you know, the people here were split, you know, with the people that I've listened to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The people that were from it, and there was people for the other guy. And, you know, they considered Romney to be the more conservative, you know, which was more fit their plan.
Right.
I don't know what they're going to do, actually, to be honest with you.
It's going to be an interesting next 24 hours.
I mean, you know, they have to make a choice, like you're saying. They have to make a decision now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll keep track of that. But the main reason I wanted to get you on, Carl, is you have just a remarkable story. You're a member of a Brazilian church, a church that's largely Brazilian.
That's correct.
You are not yourself, but I guess your girlfriend is.
I'm American,
and
yeah.
There's just some bizarre stuff going on with ICE, with our immigration service. You want to share with our listeners the story that you told me this morning?
Absolutely. You know, what I have told Tom about is that we had a boy. He's about 26, 27 years old. Okay, he was feeding his family, sending money back, of course, to Brazil. And I'm speaking, you know, on behalf of the Brazilian population on this. But what had happened was that he got arrested for speeding. Okay, and then, of course, there was an ICE warrant on him. Okay. And so what they did was they held him, you know, for ICE to come pick him up. ICE come and got him a couple of days later. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, basically my concern right now is that, yes, he did something illegal. Okay, he was here illegally. He was feeding his family. But what they did was when they picked him up, they transported him down in Massachusetts to the Plymouth House of Correction.
Which is a prison.
It's a prison. It's a full-fledged Massachusetts prison. And literally... He, you know, has not been able to talk to anyone. They won't let anyone come see him. And pretty much put him in isolation. Okay, he said the area was cold. Okay, I mean, he's been allowed to make a few phone calls. He's talked to his sister. His sister's talked to me. And literally, you know, he was getting fed one meal a day. Hardened criminals get three. I don't know what's going on with these people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
People on death row get three meals a day.
And they put him in with hardened criminals. These people were trying to feed, you know, their family.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
This is a classic example of where the Mitt Romney Republican types basically are the ones who are inviting these folks into the country. They're, mm-hmm. they're saying, hey, we'll give you a job if you'll, you know, take life and limb and come here. And they're also demagoguing the issue. They're running around going, oh, you know, we got to do something about all these people, right? Which is, in my opinion, more often than not, code for people with darker skin.
Most people won't even take the jobs that these people take. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so, the pay, anyway, that's being offered.
Yeah.
But that's the point. It gets back to the employers.
Yeah.
But instead of nailing the employers, instead of saying, okay, you know, you provoked these folks to come into this country and you're paying them and you're instead they're going after the individual human beings. This is blame the victim on steroids.
Oh, I'm telling you. I mean, then there's a second story about, you know, a lady that was, you know, coming from Miami here up to Massachusetts, okay? They were at the airport, her husband, two kids, you know, and his wife. They stopped his wife, one of the security agents did, and says, do you have a green card? And the girl said no, and they arrested her on the spot.
Right.
She's been in the Miami prisons now for almost 6 months. She's not been allowed to see her family, the kids. These people cleaned houses for a living.
Yeah.
They've done nothing wrong. They shouldn't be in with maximum, you know, security
would
prison people.
You think that, you know, I lived in Germany for a year, and I know in European countries they're pretty hard-assed about it. I mean, you know, if you're in the country illegally, they will arrest you and they will deport you. But it's like bang, it happens just like that.
2-3 days. You know what I'm saying? If you're caught in Brazil. They send you back here in 72 hours, 3 days.
Right.
If you're caught in England, the same way, because I know that another person I know from Brazil was in England. They were there illegally, and they got caught, okay? And then, you know, in England processed them out in 72 hours and sent them home.
Right. They don't want taxpayer dollars, you know, paying to put these people in jail.
Why are these people staying, right, you know, and keeping these people 30, 60, 90, 120, 6 months, okay? And I've, you know, these people are here.
And these are people you know.
And I know these people. Yes, I know these people.
This is not some rumor of somebody who's
brother. No. Yeah. I mean, I made, you know, the tracing phone calls that kept my eyes on the kid when he got arrested, okay, right to the prison, okay?
Wow.
And so I know for a fact, okay, that this is happening because I'm the guy that traced them for the girls, you know, the sister of the brother that went to jail.
So do you think that this is... Yeah,
I think it's deplorable conduct on America's side.
I agree with that. I mean, but why? Why would they do this? Is it because they're trying to jack up the stats on the number of people that they have in jail so they can either on the one hand brag about it or on the other hand say, hey, we don't have enough resources. Look, we've got all these people in jail already. What, you want us to deport 10 million other people? I mean, you know what? There's some kind of political equation. I really don't see ICE doing this stuff in the dark. Somebody making decisions at the Justice Department.
First of all, I want people to understand I have no political agenda. Okay, on this. Okay,
I understand.
Okay, so I'm in defense of the people.
Yeah.
Okay. The Brazilian people have asked me to speak on their defense because they're scared to talk to anybody.
Right.
They've learned to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they know that when they've asked me to do something, I'm going to do something about it. And one of it is bring the decision to the people,
right,
to have them look in their own backyard if they want to look at human rights issues.
Now, you told me earlier that Joe Lieberman's office, and this is, you know, one of those rare instances where Joe may be a good guy. He's not one of my favorite people, frankly, but...
He's the oversight. He's on the oversight committee for ICE.
Right. Is he the chair?
He's one of the key people. Yeah.
Right.
He's one of the key people that actually does this.
And you contacted his office,
yep,
and they said what?
It was the first time anyone has ever complained.
Amazing.
Okay. And you know, I think it's because, like I said, the people themselves are afraid to speak to anyone.
Right.
Okay. I'm not.
Right, I get it, Carl. I get it. And in fact, if any of our listeners want to get a hold of Carl, we're going to put it on our homepage at tomhartman.com as well. There's no website for this. This isn't a movement or anything like that. I mean, this is just work that you're doing in Massachusetts.
I want them to just let my people go.
Yeah, there you go. And it's Carl, C-A-R-L, Abrams, A-B-R-A-M-S, at Verizon.net is your email address. And I'll mention that again as we wrap this segment up. And also, as I said, we'll put it on our website. And maybe some folks with some resources or some ideas can get in touch with you.
Any type of help that could be offered is going to be appreciated because, you know, these people want to go home. They're arrested. They're given that choice. But then it takes 30 days, 6 months to process them out of here. Why?
Right. Yeah.
It should not.
Right.
And especially where these people are family people. In 72 hours, you can tell whether or not a person's a criminal. That's what I was given as an excuse. Oh, well, we've got to find out if he's done anything wrong first.
Right. They've got pretty sophisticated databases these days.
In 72 hours, I mean, you know, let's put it this way. The Secret Service, if you're going to go visit the White House or go anyplace else, you give them your Social Security number. In 24 hours, they know everything about you.
Of course, their answer would be, that's somebody with a Social Security number. These are people without. So we've got to do some other sort of profile.
Granted, but they still have their passport.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
And that passport is more than fully
sure,
traceable.
Sure.
Yeah. So the passport information still gives people
information. And why 6 months down the road?
That's right.
For a woman who was cleaning rooms in a hotel.
She cleans rooms for a living. And her husband cleaned houses. Her and her husband did this together.
Yeah.
And that's how they fed their family. You know what I'm saying? And to be put in prison,
yeah,
okay, with hardened criminals, yes. I'm not saying that these people did, you know, something wrong, because they did.
Right.
They know this,
right.
Okay? And even the Brazilian people will tell you, okay, yes, all right, so you know, we do know that we did something wrong.
Yeah.
But don't treat us.
The penalty is supposed to be send me home.
Don't treat me like a dog.
Yeah.
Don't treat me like a dog.
Yeah.
That's incorrect behavior, I think, you know, by this government.
Yeah. And the other thing that you've learned is that around the United States, that local and state police departments tend to be quite reasonable in the way that they deal with folks.
They actually feel bad.
But when they get turned over to ICE, then it gets really strange.
I'm telling you, you have no idea. The police department really does feel bad because a lot of these people in our communities, you may not think so, they pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it this way. The state and the government take their money for the taxes.
Sure.
And they say nothing. And they know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, these are illegals, but they're paying taxes.
Yeah.
That's the part that really hurts me the most. They take their money for taxes
and
say nothing, but yet if they're caught, they're arrested and treated like a dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ask who on this. I have no idea, but I think the people need to know. And that's why I'm speaking out on their behalf, because I was asked to.
And you're doing a great job. It's Carl, C-A-R-L, Abrams, A-B-R-A-M-S, at Verizon.net. Carl Abrams from WSRO, AM 650 in Framingham.
Thank you,
Carl, for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Good talking.
All right.
Tom Hartman here with you from the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C., live. We'll be right back.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Wear it out. Inhale it down.
Welcome back. I was just, during the break, ran down to the TV monitor, and Mitt Romney's in the room next to us speaking right now, and he was just saying, and apparently because size does matter, he's suspending. Oh, interesting. Here, Carl, you can just talk into the microphone here. Carl Abrams back with us. He's been watching this thing.
Yeah, from what I understand, he's suspending the campaign. He's not quitting.
Uh-huh.
Okay, which allows him to keep his delegates, okay, which are actually the ones that he's won so far.
Right.
He gets to keep those. Plus, he gets to keep matching contributions and so on and so forth. So he's still a player.
Interesting. So he's doing like John Edwards did on the Democratic side.
Right.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Carl.
Yep.
Thanks. So, yeah, there you go. That's what's going on. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Dan in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Dan.
Hey. Good morning. Well, as usual, first thing I do is turn the radio on and listen to you. And in doing so, I spoke oddly over myself, and that flashed across the screen on TV.
Uh-huh.
But
I think we beat the TV, didn't we?
I do both.
Alrighty.
But,
well, Dan.
Yeah, I wanted to speak about you know, what an awesome ticket would be, because I think that it's going to be McCain-Huckabee, and what an awesome ticket, although that there's drawbacks to, you know, anything and everything.
You think it's going to be a McCain-Huckabee ticket on the right?
Yeah, and I would, you know,
that's
although if I had my druthers, I'd rather have Obama, but, you know, but I think that if it was Clinton, Obama, that would be an awesome ticket.
I agree.
Yeah, because... you know, and as long as, you know, that Clinton would stay on the road and Obama would follow and we would continue the progressive path, you know, to stay energized, to keep this going, you know, honestly, fairly, you know, it's just, you know, we just got to heal the nation, but not only that, to actually, you know, patch it up, you know, in the world's eye.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Dan, and there's a lot of healing and a lot of patching that needs to be done. Thanks a lot for the call. Adam in New York City. Hey, Adam. You're on the air, Adam. Adam? No, Adam. Oh, all righty. Story in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Story. Story, you're breaking up here. Barbara in Auburn, Washington. Hey, Barbara.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi.
Boy, you set my day every day. I have to get everything done before you respond.
Thank you. What's up?
Well, I was calling because I've been watching channel to channel, and I have not seen yet where anyone has played a clip of when John McCain came back from Iraq, was caught lying, and was right on that evening television saying, okay, I lie, I exaggerate, that's just who I am.
He didn't say I lie, that's just who I am.
Well, he said, I exaggerate, I lie, one of those words.
Huh.
But he was caught, and he admitted it. He just said, well, that's who I am.
Yeah, well...
Why isn't anyone playing this thing? All this man has done is lie.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
wait for the good meat out here to wrap ourselves around it.
Yeah, but if that is the case, then whoever the Democratic nominee is needs to get that piece of video and needs to be playing it and playing it and playing it.
I'm going to email it to Oprah today.
There you go. Barbara, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. Frank in Middletown, New York. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I see you're in the Lions Den today. Good luck.
Yeah.
During the commercial break, I switched over to, God forbid, Rush for a moment, and he's absolutely apoplectic. He has heard about Romney, of course. And basically his theme, of course, continues to be, don't blame us, don't blame us. This is all your fault, it's not our fault. You know, I can't help but wonder if
this is all whose fault?
Pardon me?
This is all your fault. Who's the you that
okay, well, he doesn't exactly tie that down. It's sort of that universal, all you, well, what are you
squishy
saying?
Republicans?
He's saying a lot of Republicans are, you know, in order to stay in power, a lot of politicians are going to line up behind McCain, even though it violates their own philosophy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because they're weak, you know, need, and they want to stay in power. But I can't help but wonder if he and the others aren't really trying to create a win-win situation for those elected. I mean,
How so?
The final analysis, they operate in this increasingly marginalized world of right-wing radio by being negative and playing to a negative audience. And if McCain were, in fact, to win, which is doubtful, the presidency, then they can continue to do their, see, he's a bad guy, and he's not, you know, a true conservative. On the other hand, if Hillary or Obama wins, they can spend the next 8 years saying, see, we told you so, if you'd listened to us, there wouldn't be a Democrat in the White House.
Right. Plus, if the economy really is about to tank, and now more than 50% of economists in the United States, I think the last number was 59% of economists, say we are heading for a serious and deep recession. And if the fingers in the dike are being held mostly by the administration and the Fed, and a Democrat is elected president, and the House and Senate go Democratic, and they pull their fingers out of the dike. I mean, this I think is part of their endgame strategy, but what do I know? I'm just a conspiracy theorist. Frank, thanks a lot for the heads up. Good talking to you. Ron in Sylmar, California. Hey, Ron. Got about a minute here before we got to wrap up the hour.
I wanted to point out something to you. When you talked about earlier the total destruction of when Goldwater was running for president, Johnson ran his whole campaign on one thing, because I was a Democrat back then, and he ran it on, I will not get us in a ground war with Asia. And, of course, I was of draft age then, and I said, well, you better put that guy in office. Well, he got in office, and 6 months afterward, I voted for Johnson, and I got Goldwater.
Yeah, in effect, yeah. And some of that, frankly, came out of the LBJ assassination, and or the JFK assassination, and LBJ's desire, on the one hand, to make a stand against communism somewhere in the world, and his concern that he thought that for a while there anyway, in the first initial months after that assassination, thought that maybe Castro had something to do with it and was decided he was going to take his stand someplace where it wasn't quite so close by. But anyhow, Ron, interesting point, and thank you for making it. It's a cautionary note, certainly for all of us of any political persuasion, you know, that we have to be involved if we're going to influence the political process. It's not enough to just vote.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in broadcasting.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Program. Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Mitt Romney's still going on. He's went down and watched him speak here at the CPAC conference. All about the evils of the big unions and the big government. And we got to, you know, money doesn't come out of nowhere. No, it comes out of the pockets of the middle class to go into the pockets of the people at Bain Financial, his pump and dump shop, chop shop. Oh, my. So, anyway, on it goes. On it goes. Mitt Romney apparently is about to announce. He's obviously going to milk this thing as long as he can so that he can just continue speaking. But about to announce that he's suspending his campaign, but he's going to hang on to his delegates, apparently the same way that John Edwards did with his delegates on the Democratic side. George W. Bush has held up more than 84 nominees over his guy Bradbury, one of the guys who authored two secret memos authorizing the CIA to basically torture people. Congress doesn't want to get this guy in, so Bush is having a bit of a problem with that, but anyway. David Bossie is with us. He is the executive producer of a new movie. He's with Citizens. He's first of all the president of Citizens United, and he is the executive producer of a new movie, Hillary the Movie, which is going to be. You're not premiering it here tonight. You premiered in L.A. last week, didn't you? I'm sorry. Let me turn your mic on here. That helps. There you go.
That always helps. We have a premiere here this evening at First CPAC. All 6,000 attendees can come. Obviously, it's at the same time of the main dinner this evening, but it's a great opportunity for people here to see the film. We did have premieres in San Diego, Orange County, Los Angeles, Phoenix last week, Florida, Washington, D.C., New York City. We've been marching it out around the country, and we're really proud of the film. And it really has taken a hold. And I think if she is the Democratic nominee, it's going to have a major part of what happens between now and November.
This is your film is going to be basically the summary of the hit on Hillary that the Republicans will take. Is that the essence of what you're saying? I mean,
to boil it down to its
political reality.
Well, look, the reality of the film is it encompasses her entire career. She likes to say she has 35 years of experience. We have gone back to do the hard work of making sure that the American people are informed and educated about those years, whether it's her time in Arkansas, her time at the White House as First Lady, or as her Senate career has been over the last 8 years.
Right. Now, you're presenting this as a documentary, essentially.
It is a documentary.
But when you guys argued that in court, a judge literally laughed your lawyer out of the courtroom. Said, the judge laughed in this guy's face.
Well, no, that's not really what happened.
James
what he did
Bob
is
Jr. He was your lawyer.
Sure. But what he did was he compared it to 60 Minutes. Which the judge
your
laughed
lawyer
at.
Did, yeah, yeah. And the judge laughed at it.
But he didn't laugh at it as a document.
This is a hit piece. This is not a document.
No, he did not say that.
No, I'm
you're
saying
you're
that.
Saying that. But
yeah,
sure. It is a documentary, and
it's a
factually
hit
based.
Piece.
It's a documentary based on fact. It is a documentary that is undisputed in its fact, in its documentation, and in its presentation. So I urge you to watch it before you just call it names because you have not seen it.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
And in fact,
so I urge you to see it. I'll be happy to provide a DVD copy. You can watch it at your leisure. But I can assure you, I take very seriously facts, and I take very seriously documents, and I take very seriously testimony. And so I served as the chief investigator for the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Government Reform and Oversight. I was an investigator on the Whitewater Committee. I lived these cases, and I know them very well, as you know.
But in that context, Dan Burton fired you for taking transcripts or taking tapes of Hillary Clinton and editing them in ways that mischaracterized their reality.
10 years later, that's what people boil it down to. That's not accurate.
Dan Burton is a Republican.
Sure, and he didn't fire me. I quit. There's a distinction, obviously, there. First, and secondly, when you're in those types of battles, people tend to be scapegoated, and that is.
So you think you were the
I don't
guy
think I know. I mean, if you read every article that was written, that's what it said.
So we're talking with David
Whether
Bossie.
Whether it's the Washington Post or New York Times.
Right. He's the producer. He's president of Citizens United, a producer of Hillary the Movie, this new movie.
It's a documentary.
Documentary, okay, about Hillary. HillaryTheMovie.com, by the way, the website, and CitizensUnited.org.
Yeah. And let me just say this. I urge people, go to HillaryTheMovie.com, read about the movie, look at the cast list. Watch the trailers yourself. Go to the website, watch the trailers, read about the movie,
well,
and educate yourself.
Let's get to the details here, David. We've got about, I think, about 4 or 5 minutes.
And by the way, Mitt Romney did just literally announce, as I sat down, that he's out of the race.
Okay.
So
thanks
I thought that would be...
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I ran up here because I was literally waiting for the words to come out of his mouth.
He used the word suspended, though, right?
Well, he said, I am not taking this. If I take this to the convention, I will not allow John McCain to start his national campaign, and therefore I'll be harming the party, harming the conservative movement, and therefore I'm not doing it for myself. I didn't start this campaign as for me. I started out for the movement.
So it's a selfless thing.
I was not a Romney supporter, but I think he'll be missed in the
debate. Who were you supporting?
Fred Thompson.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you're really a movement conservative
yes,
guy.
Absolutely.
What are the, if we can, at some point, I would like to get back to the Hillary the movie, because what I'd like to know is what are the talking points when this, you know, what I would characterize as a swift boat kind of thing, not, you know, when this hits the thing, what is it going to be? You know,
absolutely.
And I'm curious about that, and I think my listeners are too. But as a movement conservative, here's John McCain, who says...
Who is not one.
Yeah, well, who is kind of campaigning as one.
But he's not one. He talks the talk, but doesn't... Has
right.
never, will never,
so
and has never
walked. So there's 6,000 movement conservatives in this building
that
today.
That is correct.
And they have aligned themselves with the Republican Party over the years.
Sure.
But there have been times...
The party of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan wasn't always a Republican. Ronald Reagan was always a conservative. And then he became a Republican
throughout
the years.
Wait a second. Reagan gave amnesty to illegals in this country.
There's no question that
Reagan
he made
raised taxes more than any president in the history of the United States. Largest tax hikes, two of them, the two largest tax hikes in the history of this country. Tell me why Reagan's a conservative. I don't get it.
Ronald Reagan.
Reagan invaded a country that was that represented no threat to us, and you know, a war without authorization of Congress. I mean, isn't that a conservative value to follow the Constitution? He goes into Grenada.
Come on, he is.
What made him a conservative?
Look, Ronald Reagan was a conservative.
He talked
long before I was born. He was a guy in the...
In 48, he was campaigning for Truman.
I understand.
He was a Democrat before you were born.
He had a conversion. That is true. I don't... There are plenty of conservative Democrats in this country.
Right.
There may be even more conservative Democrats in this country than liberal Democrats in this country, because my parents are both conservative Democrats.
Yeah.
I was the first Republican... I was the first person in my family to register as a Republican of either side, any generation. So I was a... I literally... broke the mold.
We're sort of the opposites on that. My parents are Republicans.
Well, so. but you know, my family's from Boston.
Yeah.
We were, you know, a John F. My grandmother, who's 94, still, you know, lives in an era of JFK.
Sure.
And that is just how people operate, and it's a generational thing. People grow up.
So what are the conservative? What's the
look,
what are the
John
movement conservatives going to do now? What are you guys going to do?
John, I think. What he has allowed here is potentially...
What Romney has allowed.
What Romney has allowed is potentially the seriousness of a one-on-one race, meaning Huckabee versus McCain. And I believe that a vast majority
of conservatives
will go to Huckabee. Now, I don't know, I will say this, doing the math in a three-way race was really, really difficult and probably impossible. But the math in a two-man race may be able to be done. Now, I don't know if enough of Romney's support turns out for Huckabee. I think that there would be a dramatic number of those people, if Huckabee had backed out,
right,
that they would go to Romney, and Romney backing out goes to Huckabee. Whether it's big enough to stop this momentum...
But Huckabee is on record as saying that he favors amending the Constitution to strip out separation of church and state. That, again, is something that Barry Goldwater would have been horrified by.
I'm a movement conservative. I have the biggest in this room in Washington. I have the largest conservative PAC in the country,
mm-hmm,
bar none.
Right.
So we gave a $5,000 maximum contribution, which is all you can do,
right,
to Mitt Romney. Not to Mitt Romney, but to Mr. Huckabee, to Governor Huckabee.
Right.
We gave it to Duncan Hunter. We gave it to Sam Brownback, and we gave it to Fred Thompson.
Right.
So we gave $5,000 to each of them.
With Hunter and Brownback, certainly you have guys who are pretty solid, pretty consistent.
Yeah, and obviously Fred Thompson, too, I think.
Well, I could debate that with you, but you know, I'll give you that. You want to stick around for just a second and get into some of the details of this movie?
Sure,
I'm curious to find out, you know, what's coming down the road for Hillary if she's the nominee.
Certainly,
as I said, I think my listeners would like to know. We do have to take a break, though. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with David Bossy, executive producer of Hillary the Movie, hillarythemovie.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from the Conservative Political Action... Conference. I was starting to say committee there.
It's easy to do.
Yeah.
It is very easy. CPAC, you always think it's a PAC, it's a committee.
Yeah.
But it's a conference.
Yeah. But and with me, David Bossy, who actually has a PAC, Americans United.
I do.
Americans
Citizens United Citizens Political United. Victory Fund.
CitizensUnited.org, the website, one of the largest conservative PACs, not Republican, but conservative PACs in the United States.
And you can go to see our anti-McCain ad. By the way, we did an anti-McCain ad campaign last week.
Yeah, especially against his campaign finance reform.
Well, we have that going on at the Supreme Court, which we'll find out in about 10 days if we're going to be at the Supreme Court, taking on McCain-Feingold as it relates to advertising for our film.
Right.
But we ran an ad campaign comparing John McCain to Hillary Clinton last week on nationally on Fox News, and it came out on Wednesday night. Time Magazine broke the story. And then Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, and everybody kind of came out of the woodwork as that ad campaign went up on the air. And
really
proud of it.
I'm guessing as much as the conservative talkers loved it, the official Republican Party shuddered very hard.
I suspect they did.
Yeah.
But that is not our
That's not
problem.
Your problem. There you go.
But you can go to CUPVF.org, Citizens United Political Victory Fund,
right.
CUPVF.org, and watch the ad is just right there. You can watch it. But it's been on Fox News the last week, and Meet the Press showed it as part of the roundtable. And James Carville and Mary Madeline and had to discuss. It was very interesting to see happen.
Well, let's get to the details of this thing. It's Terry Crapell over at ConWeb Watch, one of these guys that watches conservatives and what they're up to, says this movie is going to be, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, this movie is going to be the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth against Hillary, and that, and
wow.
this is basically kind
I'm
of
I'm going to have to pay
credit.
Attention to whoever you just mentioned. I'm going to have to go find him.
He says you guys are, you know, following the model perfectly, and that,
yeah,
that it probably will work as well. And that's,
oh, wow.
that's you know, for those of us on
great
the
great praise,
those of us on the Democratic side, a little nervous making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so what are we going to get hit with here?
Well, look,
David?
The film is, to be perfectly honest, I get a lot of liberals and independents who have come to some of the premieres around the country. And they actually come out of the theater saying, oh, my goodness.
Damn, I should have voted for Dennis Kucinich.
Well, or maybe I'm a vote for Obama, or it has reminded me about all of the things that we didn't like about her. It really is a – but let me just say this. People like to say it's part of the vast right-wing conspiracy. It's going to swift boat her, all of those things.
Well, it is.
Well, it's not.
Proud of that.
Well, no, I'm proud of the film. And I am a conservative. I'm a conservative leader. I'm the founder of the vast right-wing conspiracy.
There you go.
I'm not,
so now you're owning up to it.
Look, well, I mean, it's a silly thing. I mean, 6,000 people in an auditorium.
But
there's
what
no
are the
conspiracy?
Reasons?
You know what I mean?
It's
a silly theory.
It's like the liberal conspiracy.
Yeah, it's like the liberal
that Limbaugh's been talking about all these years.
It's
I mean,
just,
we do all this stuff right out in the open.
Right.
But you know, we just have 2 minutes left.
Let me tell you about
what are the details.
The film is outstanding. And let me just say again, go to HillaryTheMovie.com because you can watch the trailers. Watch the TV ads that we're fighting in court to go see, and see the cast. The cast consists
of
reporters.
Give me 2 reasons why I shouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, let me just say this. First of all, I don't make movies to stop people from voting for her. First of all, it's one of the things that you can't do when we're trying to make films. We can't do that. This film does not advocate her election or defeat. It just simply...
Although the courts say that you do.
No. The courts didn't say that. But the courts say that our ads are political ads and therefore need to follow McCain-Feingold. We're saying it's an infringement on our free speech and therefore they're not political ads, and that's
so
what we're going to
say. So we know with John Kerry the main hit was, he wasn't really a patriot. What's the main hit against Hillary Clinton?
Well, Hillary Clinton, the people that came out in our film, Kathleen Willey, Billy Dale, Joe Connor. Joe Connor's father was murdered by the FALN terrorists in New York City in the 70s. The Clintons, she was running for the Senate the first time in 2000, pardoned the 14 FALN terrorists for 34 or 39 bombings throughout New York and Chicago. Without being asked for clemency, Clinton was asked 2 days later, pardoned these people.
Why?
I'm sorry?
Why?
Why? Well, we would like to know why. And so literally 3,000 people had applied, and they had only granted 3 commutations.
Now, with regard to Kathleen Willey, I had her on the program. I read her book when it came out a month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she seemed to me not all that credible, and she wasn't making accusations against Hillary.
Well,
she was making accusations against Bill.
Right. But what,
so what does that have to do with Hillary?
What it is the private investigators used to intimidate these women, really Hillary ran that whole operation throughout the 90s, throughout the 80s and 90s for that matter. And we have one of the private investigators that was hired to do that, talks about it. Bill, Dick Morris, who worked for them.
Well, he's working with you and putting this movie together.
He's putting this movie out. Worked for them for 20 years.
Yeah, but he got busted for being with a hooker and they fired him, and he's upset about it. Well, he's a disgruntled employee.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't know what they were doing because he was in the room when they were doing it.
Yeah, but he's got a dog in the fight.
But that doesn't...
I suppose you do, too.
If they wanted to sue Dick Morris or me for the content, by all means. But they won't. All they'll do is attack him for what you just said, try to attack his credibility.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the facts aren't the facts. And what we say is, look at the facts of this film. By the way, Billy Dale... fired travel office director, Joe Connor, Kathleen Willey, all Democrats, not part of the vast right-wing conspiracy, all whose lives were ruined by the Clintons.
Interesting. David Bossie, the executive producer of Hillary the Movie, the president of Citizens United, HillaryTheMovie.com, CitizensUnited.org, David, thank you for being with us.
Look forward to doing it again.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham Hotel, where Mitt Romney just announced he's suspending his campaign. Lots of wild stuff going on. The conservative movement based here really having to make some tough decisions now. And Gary Aldrich is with us. He is a former FBI agent, the author of Unlimited Access, an FBI agent inside the Clinton White House. He also wrote a couple of novels, Thunder on the Left and Speak No Evil, and is the president and founder of the Patrick Henry Center for Individual Liberty, which is thepatrickhenrycenter.com on the Internet. And, Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
First of all, your book, you know, an anti-Clinton book, there's, you know, a lot of this coming down the road. We were just talking with the guy, David, who's doing the Hillary the movie. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to get to the details of this with you in just a second, because you were an FBI agent in the Clinton administration. But I'm curious, do you define yourself as a movement conservative, as a conservative within this movement?
I think I do. I was scooped up, if you will, along the way after the book came out by the movement conservatives. But I needed to learn who they were, of course, conducted my investigations there, and determined they were the group at that time that fit my profile.
Fit your
best.
Person, yeah,
sure.
Your perspective.
Right.
So what are you going to do now? Mitt Romney was sort of the Wall Street Journal branch of the Republican Party, the largely movement conservative, and on those areas where he had been liberal, you know, gay marriage and whatnot, he changed and aligned himself with you guys. He's gone. Mike Huckabee is not taken seriously in a lot of quarters and has said some really strange things, like let's amend the Constitution to put God into it, and which, the Baptist one or the Catholic one or the Jewish one or the Hindu one? I mean, you know, it's like, where do we go with that? Doesn't seem conservative to me, frankly. And you guys have a big problem with John McCain. What's going to come out of this conference, do you think?
I hope what comes out of this conference and in the weeks and months to follow is a realization at long last that the movement, that would be the grassroots folks who make up this country, are really the employers. And these folks that we're talking about now in this process are our employees.
You mean the politicians?
The politicians are our employees. They're not our king. It's not a monarchy. And we have shown in the past when conservative people in this country, and that includes people in the movement or just working stiffs out there, do not like a policy or a procedure or a direction either the White House or Congress is taking, we can change it, and we have. There are so many examples of how we have changed a political direction of this country.
Yeah. On both sides. I mean, you're singing my song. I mean,
on both sides.
It's power from the ground up.
Yes, it is. And I'm afraid too many of my fellow associates here at the conference, maybe they didn't have the benefit that I did of actually working in the White House and on Capitol Hill. But you find out that these men and women put on their britches one leg at a time. Just like everybody else, and sometimes they have good ideas, and sometimes they don't.
To what extent, in that context, you worked inside the Clinton White House.
That's right.
To what extent were the Clintons, or specifically Bill Clinton, I guess, he was the president, although Hillary was quite active, apparently, politically, to what extent were they responding to the people, to this kind of, this power that you're talking about?
Well, they do. They do. Of course, align themselves with a base. They have to have a base to get elected and
right.
continue to have power. And so I believe their policies were reflecting what the base wanted them to do, and, in fact, what the base said they needed to do if, in fact, the base supported them.
Mm-hmm. Although the base was against NAFTA, it was against WTO. In fact, the majority of Americans were.
That was later on in the process, but my first thought is gays in the military was the number one issue as they hit the door over there at the White House. That became their very first issue, and that was looking at the radical movement in saying, yes, we understand, we made a deal with you, and now we're going to fulfill that deal.
Wasn't that an issue that was forced by the Republicans? I mean, that was, you know, Republicans were trying to put those on ballots. They were trying to amend the Constitution.
Well,
there were several pieces of legislation.
That came later.
It seemed to me that the Democrats were being reactive to the Republicans pulling out a wedge.
Well, I don't know that. First of all, if you gain the White House and you're in there in the Oval Office, I'm not sure the very first thing you tee up is a controversial wedge issue.
Yeah.
And I think this set them off in a direction.
It was a political mistake.
Well, in later years, Bill Clinton began to understand that a more moderate or gradual approach to some of the greater issues that he had in mind was the key to actually having these things get through. And but of course, the other thing, let's remember, was the health care issue that took up, again, created an enormous controversy because they were bending and twisting and breaking all the rules in terms of putting Hillary Clinton in charge of it. She had no standing to be in charge of a health care initiative. There was nothing in the law that permitted it. In fact, quite the opposite. There is a law in the books that say that an immediate relative, of course she was, could not be a government employee. So she had
the anti-nepotism law.
Right, exactly.
Basically. But she wasn't being paid for that. So.
Well, that doesn't really matter down at the White House.
So
you have a certain number of days you can work down there without going through the proper legal procedures to have standing. And she exceeded that all over the place. But that aside, that's procedure. What really counts here is that the American people took a look at the health care plan that she was offering and they rejected it. And that's what I'm trying to say here
today.
Well,
after $300 million of advertising from the health care industry.
Well,
we all remember Harry and Louise.
But see, that's America, and that's what I'm trying to say here today.
Well, no, that's industry.
The people of this country, many of them who work in industry, and our stockholders in industry actually run this country, not the president, not a senator, not a congressman. No matter how important they make themselves look, you and I are the ones that run this country.
So if there was a company that had hundreds of millions of dollars to be made with something that offended you, for example, RU486, you know, an abortion, what you guys would refer to as an abortion drug, and they started a massive, you know, $400 million advertising campaign to promote legislation, you would call that the will of the people?
In a way, yes, because as we have just seen, Mr. Romney here, Governor Romney, spent millions and millions and millions of dollars to attempt to be president, and it didn't work.
Yeah, but that he's a person. I mean, a lot of people, I think, looked at him and said he's disingenuous.
Well,
I mean, here's the question that both you and I have to confront, I think, frankly, you know, movement conservatives and movement progressives, and that is, in a country where the Supreme Court has said that corporations are persons and that money is speech, we don't have one man, one vote, or one person, one vote. We have the extraordinary power of, like, the Mars family and the Walton families pushing for the so-called death tax, you know, to change that behind the scenes with hundreds of millions.
We have
money spinning.
Well, my answer to that is the rejection of the immigration bill, which occurred, and of course that would, Senator McCain was the leading proponent of that bill, and there was an enormous amount of capitalistic money behind that bill to get that bill pushed through, including George Bush in the White House, and it didn't matter how much money went into the lobbying there. It didn't matter how much sword rattling went on the part of the White House or the Senate of the House.
But
people,
I didn't see any
people
ads
rejected
run for
it.
That. I didn't see any ads run for it.
A
and
lot
what
of
I
this,
did see was a lot of Lou Dobbs. I really think he's almost single-handedly nuked that thing.
So Lou Dobbs runs the country.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's just very influential. And
I like him too. But
I didn't see, you know, the meatpacking companies out there advertising or the hotels that hire people to clean the rooms.
They have a particular problem here in terms of bringing too much attention to themselves. The inspectors may be knocking on the door the next day to find out how many of the people in there actually are legal and illegal.
Yeah. Well, I do want to give you a chance to talk about your book, Unlimited Access. We're talking with Gary Aldridge. He is a former FBI agent. He's the author of Unlimited Access, an FBI Agent Inside the Clinton White House. And we've got about 2 minutes left, Gary, here. And so what's, you know, in summary, Congress, in fact, asked you to come and testify before them, and you passed on that. You declined?
Well, actually, no. I did give some testimony, but not in front of a camera.
I
gave testimony to Congress. I gave testimony to special prosecutors. And
so what do we need to know?
What you need to know is that that the Clinton Act, if you will, back in those two terms, was they just didn't rise to the occasion. Probably half the things they wanted to do they couldn't do because their approach was so chaotic that it would stumble along just falling upon its own process and of chaos. And this is what I found, I think, more than anything else in the Clinton White House was the lack of organization. They had plenty of passion. We all know that. They had plenty of hopes and activities planned.
Had you seen previous administrations, Bush and Reagan? Were you in the White House for those?
Yes, Bush.
I'm curious of your comparison.
Well, all administrations have a little fit and start at the front end, but sure. Normally they use that transition period to eliminate a lot of that. The Clintons hadn't even planned for January 20th. They weren't ready, and they didn't have their people selected, and they didn't have the investigations underway to give them clearances and all the rest of it. It was a total chaos hitting the White House, and they had an arrogance that basically said, hey, we don't care what the rules are here. We're bringing our own rules along. And some of that works, but some of it's illegal.
Yeah, and thus your concern, and you're writing your book, Unlimited Access, an FBI agent inside the Clinton White House. Gary Aldrich.
Good to be with you.
Thank you, and also president of the Patrick Henry Center, thepatrickhenrycenter.com. Interesting conversation, Gary. Thanks for dropping by and talking
to
us.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too. It's 45 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com on the web. And if you want to drop into our live chat room, we'll be right back.
Helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live from CPAC, where Mitt Romney could no longer withstand the withering attacks of his former positions by his current self, and so has dropped out. And our program, by the way, brought to you by the 200,000 healthcare worker, in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199, saying that healthcare should be a right, not a privilege for all Americans, and good on them for it. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I understand that in using the word suspension, Governor Romney is able to hold on to his delegates.
Right, the same as John Edwards did in the Democratic side.
Now, do we know how many delegates John Edwards is going to take to the convention with him?
I don't have that number in front of me. I know that by suspending his campaign, in some races, he actually lost his delegates. They went back into the pool.
Oh.
In some states, the Democratic Party does it differently than the Republican Party, and there are certain thresholds that you have to meet in order to hang on to your delegates, certain vote thresholds. And I frankly don't have the state-by-state breakout information.
Oh, all right.
But Edwards, I believe that Edwards is keeping the majority of his delegates, and that he did lose some of his delegates when he suspended his race. Romney, this is subject to correction, but my understanding from talking with people here about how the Republican side works, and from what I've read, is that Romney will be able to hang on to all of his delegates. But we'll see.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. And thanks for the call. Good to
You're
hear
welcome.
From you. Lisa in Garberville, California. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. You know, by the way, I just want to say, Lisa, before you get started, the two things that are becoming so obvious to me from this conference is, number one, they were all prepared for Hillary Clinton to be the nominee. And I think that they're probably still expecting it, because I haven't seen any. I mean, there's right across the row from me and down the aisle a little bit, they're selling all these conservative books and pamphlets and things. And they've got $3 bills with Hillary Clinton's face on them. They've got anti-Hillary posters, Hillary dartboards, Hillary everything. There's no Obama anything. So these folks here are either, you know, they're slow to react, or they're assuming that Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee. Anyhow, to your point, Lisa.
Okay, actually, just to comment on that real briefly, this is not why I called in, but it is very obvious and apparent to me that regardless that the conservatives say that they want Hillary to be the candidate, I think many of them are false, and they are very concerned that Barack Obama might become the candidate. But nevertheless,
well, they've already invested millions of dollars in taking down Hillary. The movies, the books,
right.
I mean, you know, it's like they really need her to be the candidate now.
Absolutely, this is true. Now, I'm actually calling about Barack Obama, and I'm very concerned because he's a great motivational speaker and getting people really motivated, yet he has said things that is very contradictory to what he has said prior, and the Republicans, along with Hillary, is not discussing this. For example, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, but for example, he is taking money from corporations, as though he says he's the only one that is not.
No, he's not. There, are, none of them are, actually. Corporations, I don't believe, can give money directly. You have to have a PAC to do that, to give money directly to a campaign. What happens is you get people within a company who individually give money, and sometimes they do what's called bundling, which is where, you know, your maximum campaign contribution is either $2,200 or $2,400. And so they go out and they find, you know, 10 or 15 friends or coworkers or whatever, and each one of them puts in the money. And, you know, Bush, when he really pioneered this and did it very, very well, I say with a grimace, and he had his Rangers and his Super Rangers, I forget what they were called, with people who had bundled, you know, 1,000 contributions or 100 contributions. There's bundling going on the Obama side and on the Clinton side.
Absolutely.
But the Clinton side is actually taking money, my understanding has actually taken money from lobbyists. And the Obama side will not take money from lobbyists.
You're saying that the nuclear manufacturing company, which I've been hearing on Democracy Now, even from the progressive movement, that is stating that Barack Obama is taking money from the lobbyists. And you're stating that is incorrect?
I frankly don't know the details of it.
Okay.
My understanding, Lisa, is that the company, well, I can tell you flat out, the company itself is not supporting anybody because the companies aren't doing
And a couple other items which I'm very concerned about, seeing as though we really don't want somebody who's lying in the White House once again, that he also stated, Barack Obama, that he passed a bill in Congress. And I don't know, unfortunately, what bill that was, but I was told that it was brought to Congress, but they shot it down. And when he's going into these debates, he continuously states that he was able to pass this bill. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know what bill you're talking about, Lisa, specifically. But what's wrong with somebody changing their position? I mean, you know, Bill Clinton changed his positions on a number of things once he became president. We have, frankly, John Edwards, almost all the things that he was running on were things that were different from the way that he voted back when he was a senator a decade ago. And not all of them, but many of them. I believe in redemption, and I believe in the ability of people to change their minds. In fact, I want a politician who can change their mind.
100%. The last thing that I've noticed is he is so clear with the American people that he is not for universal health care, and yet his wife is out there at that big convention in Los Angeles stating that my husband supports universal health care, and he will bring that to the people. And I don't know whether or not she's informed wrong or if he was...
Well, he's in favor of universal health. Again, I'm not a surrogate for the Obama campaign, and I'm not going to speak on behalf
absolutely.
Of them. But
I'm
my understanding is... My understanding is that he's saying universal, and I think maybe what you're talking about is single payer. And there was a time when he was in favor of single payer health care. In fact, the Clinton campaign has run an attack ad against him for that. And I'm in favor of single payer health care. I think that that's the only solution to the thing. But now both he and Hillary Clinton have backed away from that. But you know, bottom line, these things don't shoot him down, Lisa. I don't think. And just like I don't think, frankly, all these conservative attacks on Hillary are going to shoot her down, I think the people are going to, and thank you for the call, I think people are just going to look at these candidates, they're going to look at their positions, but mostly they're going to be looking at the candidates. Most political decisions, ultimately, not by political junkies like you and me, people who are really paying attention, but by the majority, unfortunately, by the majority of Americans, most political decisions are made on gut.
Exposing the con in conservative con. This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
The smart people get their news.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, the largest annual get-together, shindig, hoedown of conservatives in the nation, movement conservatives. This is not the Republican Party. This is the conservative movement. And we are here, and we're having a fine time. Just watched Mitt Romney. His campaign could not withstand the withering attacks of his campaign. Thomas Schatz is with us. He's the president of Citizens Against Government Waste, CAGW.org. Tom, it really seems to me, with regard to Mitt Romney, that he's been running all these attack commercials. This is why all the other Republicans don't like him personally, if the news reports are really to be believed, because he just, mercilessly goes after them for positions that he used to hold. So would it be safe to say that Mitt Romney's campaign just crumbled under the attacks of Mitt Romney's campaign?
Well, it's certainly something to consider. It was noticeable, to say the least. And, look, they had to respond. John McCain had to respond in most instances because he was running ahead. And I think what he's learned, certainly based on the 2000 campaign, is you don't sit there and take the shots. You go right back.
Right.
And clearly, one way or another, all of this had an impact. And look, all the candidates have questions from the groups that are here today about various matters. And no one's perfect except, of course, my wife.
Yeah.
Mine
is.
Yeah, okay. That's it.
Ours
yeah.
are.
Right. So, you disagree with your friends, you disagree with your colleagues at work, but ultimately the objective of what everyone here today wants to do at this conference is go out there and get a conservative administration in Washington, both in the White House and get more Republicans and possibly the majority back in Congress. But you're right, there is a difference between a conservative majority and the Republican Party.
Yes.
We've seen
a big difference.
Right.
And in fact, this is where I'm just a little befuddled. I mean, Ronald Reagan passed the two largest tax increases in the history, arguably of the world,
right.
Certainly of the United States.
Right.
Ronald Reagan oversaw the largest expansion of government, not during time of war, with the exception of Civil War, World War I, and World War II.
Before George Bush.
In the history of the United States. And now George W. Bush has outdone Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Ronald Reagan borrowed and spent more money than any president before him, to the point that this year we're going to pay interest. The average American family is going to pay about $1,600 in interest on the $300 billion debt that's still left over, or the $300 billion interest payment on the $3 trillion debt that's still left over from Ronald Reagan. And Bush has doubled that. I mean, it's like people who say that they're conservatives, that the movement, the conservative movement endorses, and guys that you endorse, I'm assuming, Citizens Against Government Waste, they're not talking your talk. They're talking your talk. They're not walking your walk.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, two things. First of all, let's make sure, that in case the IRS is listening, it's the Council for Citizens Against Government Waste Political Action Committee that endorses people.
Okay. Your sister organization.
Always like to make sure.
Okay.
Look, the effort is to try to impact the debate. We're not going to win everything.
Right.
Earmark reform is a good example. This should have been done years ago by the Republicans. They refused because they viewed it as a way to get reelected. Now, of course, we have the Democrats who won on the earmarks are the currency of corruption platform, and they're not doing enough to restrain them. There was a vote earlier today trying to get the Republican caucus's moratorium in place while they had more reform, lost by, I think, 8 votes on a procedural question. So is it too late? Maybe not. But I don't think there's any question that a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress would tax more and spend more. And if you just listen to what they're talking about, they have no idea how they're going to pay for this.
Well, if they tax more and balance the budget, isn't that a good thing?
No.
Why not?
Because that increases the size and scope of government.
No, I'm not saying if they spend more. I'm saying if they tax more and balance the budget, isn't that a good thing? Because George Bush, these guys, they say he cut taxes. He didn't cut taxes. He borrowed about $2 trillion over the last 8 years, mostly from, or at least half of it from sheikhs and Chinese, and gave that money to people who have incomes between $250,000 and $1 billion. And said, here, we're going to call this a tax cut, but, you and I and our children and grandchildren are going to pay for it. That's not a tax cut. That's a tax deferral.
Right. Well, we're paying for more than that. We're paying for the spending. We're not just paying for the tax cuts. And one could argue that, by the way, now...
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, and everybody is now saying, let's reduce taxes to stimulate the economy. So the theory is if you give people more money across the board,
right,
they'll spend it, and that will help the economy. So that begs the question, why would you then raise taxes at any later date? Doesn't the economy always do well when people have more of their own money?
And well, then it becomes this gets the question of why have any taxes at all.
Well, yeah, and of course the decision's being made. Do you want Washington to decide how to spend your money, or do you want to be able to keep more of your own and do it yourself? There's a big distinction.
I mean, yeah, okay, there's some great slogans here, and I think ultimately what it breaks down to is this issue of what is democracy? What is a republic? You know, how does this country organize? I mean, if the majority of the people say, there are some things that are too big for me to handle.
Mm-hmm.
I can't put aside enough money to be able to pay for the health care if I get cancer. I'm not sure I can put aside enough money to pay for my old age retirement if we slide into something like the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like at a certain point, I can't put aside enough money to protect myself if there's an earthquake in Portland, Oregon, where I live in an earthquake zone or a giant flood. I mean, at a certain point, and certainly I can't pay for an army to protect myself if Canada and England decide to invade us like they did in the War of 1812, although arguably we declared war against them. But in any case, you get the point. I mean, there are some things that it's appropriate for us to have a government for. So the question is, if we the people collectively say, through our elected representatives, yeah, we would like to have Social Security. We'd like to actually pay more taxes and get what we... you know, what Michael Moore calls free health care. We all know it's not free, but we'd like to have, you know, universal single-payer health coverage, and I'm willing to pay more taxes to get it. What's wrong with that? Isn't that the conservative way, ultimately, to say, hey, it's the voice of the people?
Except the people are of two minds. They want the government, but they don't want to pay the taxes. And therefore, you end up with overspending, and in some cases... maybe not as much money as you might need to do.
I didn't hear the people screaming during the Clinton administration. He raised taxes, balanced the budget, and...
Well, but he balanced the budget because the economy grew and money came in from capital gains and a lot from businesses, and people who made money in the market were paying more taxes. Of course, now you have the reverse. The market's dropping. You're getting less money, and therefore you're going to have more
But
issues.
People making more money on the market... I mean, I've made some money on the market this year, and I'm going to pay, even though my income tax rate on the salary that I get is... fairly high. The amount of the top income tax that I'm going to pay on the money that I get from dividends and interest is going to be 15%.
Right.
Tell me why that's fair.
You could talk about double taxation. You could talk about the need for companies to keep that money in order to reinvest it. But I don't have that much of a problem with low taxes. I have much more of a problem with higher spending. And the fact is that neither party likes to reduce anything. And it's always easier in Washington to say, let's go create a new program, than it is to fix something that might not be working well. But, you know, on the tax side, on the entitlement side, it's one thing to say you want it. It's another thing to say, as in particular Hillary Clinton has said, well, I'm just not going to change anything with Social Security and Medicare. They're going bankrupt. You can't raise enough taxes
take the cap off
to do that.
Social Security will be solvent forever.
No, it won't.
Taking the cap off
entirely.
That's
correct. I am, too. If you look at what the Social Security trustees have said, because we looked at this, they say it adds a few years to solvency. Not forever.
You're talking about solvency of the fund.
Of the
trust fund.
Right, which doesn't
exist.
Which doesn't exist.
Which has been spent by presidents starting with Reagan. But the trust fund was only for the boomers. We have this anomaly where the baby boomer generation is the only generation that is both paying for the retirement of their parents and setting aside money in a savings account to pay for their own retirement. And the assumption is that when that generation dies in the 2020s, 2030s, 2040s, 2050s, that the trust fund was supposed to go away. It was designed from the get-go to go away. It was supposed to be a temporary measure. Social Security before 83 was pay-as-you-go, and it's supposed to go back to pay-as-you-go after 2030. The trust fund is supposed to vanish.
Except, again, when you look at their projections, removing the cap does two things. Number one, it takes money away from people. And number two...
Well, it takes money away from people making more than $97,000 a year.
And by the way, which is not a lot of money to a lot of people living around here. It may be a lot of money in the middle of the country, but it's not a lot when you have to live in a high-cost city. But if you take that off, you are not, quote-unquote, setting it aside. It goes into the government, and it gets spent on everything else. That's why there's a deficit in Social Security.
Because we've been borrowing.
Exactly. Yeah. 10 years the lines for us, we're in
trouble. I agree with you in opposition to borrowing from the Social Security Trust Fund. But Thomas Schatz, I'm pronouncing it right, Tom Schatz, he's the president of Citizens Against Government Waste, CAGW.org. Tom, thanks for dropping by.
Okay, thank you
very
much.
Great conversation.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
This is our country, all of us, including David Horowitz, who's sitting here with me. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Our program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199, suggesting that health care should be a right, not a privilege.
My first mother-in-law was a member of 1199.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? God bless her. Hey, you've got David Horowitz. First of all, nice to meet you in person.
Good to meet you. This is my favorite Air America show.
Thank you. We have done battle on the radio in the past, two or three times. But it's nice to meet you in person. I'm holding a flyer which has a picture of a couple of women in. These aren't burkas, are they? Muslim garb, just showing their eyes, and one of them is carrying a sign which says "God bless Hitler." And at the top it says Stop the Genocide, and at the bottom it says Islamofascism Awareness Week, April 7th through 11, 2008. This is your new gig.
That's right. I'm actually kicking this campaign off Saturday night here, and you're welcome to come. Congresswoman Sue Myrick, who's the head of the Congressional Anti-Terrorism Caucus, which includes Democrats, is going to speak. And we're going to launch on 100 more campuses, a campaign to sign a declaration against genocide, which will condemn Hamas, which is a genocidal organization, Hezbollah, which is a genocidal army, and will repudiate the saying of Mohammed, which is in the declaration, which says that the redemption will only come when Muslims go to war with the Jews and kill them. It's funny how people don't notice this. There is it's like the elephant in the room. There's a global religious crusade, one of whose agendas is to destroy the Jewish state, the state of Israel, as the little Satan. Of course, after that, they want to destroy the great Satan. And we're just going to... I welcome if Air America listeners will support this.
I don't think you're going to find anybody, David Horowitz, who's going to say, yeah, I'm in favor of genocide. You're not going to find anybody who's going to say that.
But
have a country in the Middle East where over 1 million people have died, where 4 million people have been displaced. I mean, I'm going to be in Darfur in March.
Another genocide.
Yeah, exactly. And one that I will acknowledge has a component of Islam associated with it. Although it's not the particular type of Islamofascism I suspect that you're talking about.
No, it exactly is. It was first against Christians, and now it's against Muslims who don't sign on to their...
Yeah.
Now, I have never...
But the country in the Middle East I'm speaking of is Iraq.
I got that.
I mean, yeah. and you know, I don't know of 1 million people being killed anywhere else by any other, you know, state actor like the United States.
This is like saying holding the United States responsible for the deaths in World War II.
Iraq was, you know, Saddam Hussein was not Adolf Hitler or Tojo. He was not. He did not attack us. He didn't take almost all of Europe.
Well, neither did Hitler attack us. People on the left forget that.
Hitler declared war against us. Saddam Hussein never declared war against us. When we attacked the Japanese, Hitler joined them and declared war against us.
He did declare war against us. But
let's keep history clean here.
Saddam Hussein
Iraq never declared war against us. Iraq said, come on, bring the inspectors in, please, all you want. And there were and the inspectors were saying, and Hans Blick testified before the UN.
You're completely wrong.
We have complete access.
I didn't want to get into an argument about how the Iraq war started. because it's much more important as to what we do now. But that's not the case. He invited the inspectors in after Bush put 100,000 troops on his border, which we could not keep there.
Well, after this resolution passed the Senate authorizing force and after the U.N. passed the resolution. And, yeah, I'll give you that.
And after the U.N. passed a resolution which said comply or else, which he did not do.
But let's remember that we were the ones who pulled them out in the first place in 98. It was Clinton who pulled the inspectors out so that he could bomb them.
Well, because, no... Well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is. But in any case,
I'm not gonna stop the genocide,
Islamophascism, or David Horowitz.
Of what Clinton did, but look,
why,
here we are.
Why limit it to, you know, if you want to talk about genocide, I mean, what about what's going on in Burma right
now? Here's the, because there isn't a global movement which has agents in the United States, in Europe, which has blown up things everywhere, and which has made very clear what its intention is. As soon as they have enough missiles in place to start a war in the Middle East, whose agenda will be the elimination of the Jewish state. Now, Iraq, here we are in Iraq.
You know, David, I'm sorry, we've got about 30 seconds. I want you to make your point. How do we stop the genocide?
How do we stop it?
Right. What's your plan?
Well, first of all, by getting all you leftists on board for understanding that you are as threatened as we are by the Islamic threat.
Okay, so we're all afraid. Now what do we do?
Now what we do is we stop, for example, in the Middle East, we stop talking to Abbas, who's a terrorist, and we just show them that terror isn't going to get you anywhere.
So instead of talking to Abbas, we do what? Nuke him?
You stop financing him, you stop talking to him, and you deal with Hezbollah when they violate an international border, which they did in Egypt.
Yeah.
You take them to
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
She heard 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications. Strategic Communications, isn't it, Christy?
That's exactly it.
With the Center for American Progress, is on the line with us. Hey, Christy, welcome.
How are you? I'm so jealous you get to be at CPAC.
Oh, I'm having great fun.
I love CPAC. It's such a crazy carnival of wackiness.
Oh, you should drop by tomorrow.
I think I might.
Come on down. I'll be here doing Radio Row from noon to 3. Come on in. I'll set you down, put you on the air, and talk about whatever's going on.
I'd be happy just to walk around and look at the shows going on.
It's an absolute hoot. I'm telling you, it really is. So I could possibly even. Actually, you can probably get credentials really easy yourself. But
I can sneak past the gates.
Yeah,
they're not that bright.
Yeah. Well, apparently. We've already talked about this, and you've already talked about it, too, but I just think it's so funny. I've asked two conservatives now, isn't it apparent that Mitt Romney could no longer withstand the attacks of Mitt Romney against the former policies of Mitt Romney? And he took himself down.
Yeah? Yeah. I was expecting this to happen, although I have to admit I wasn't expecting it to happen today. But, you know, the rumor mill started churning bright and early this morning that was going to happen. And, you know, I think that you're right. I think he crumbled under the own horror that his previous administration and also his negative campaigning really did to him. I think that he tried to play a smart political game and it just failed,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. And $30 million in the hole, too.
That's so much cash.
What I'm curious about is, did he buy his way to the governorship of Massachusetts the way he tried to buy his way to the president of the United States? Because I think most people just assume that he did some sort of wunderkind thing I guess in German it would be kind, by becoming the first Republican and Mormon to be elected in the largely Catholic and Democratic state of Massachusetts, when in fact it could be that simply he became the first guy who bought himself a governor's race. Well, he wouldn't be the first, but, you know, that's what he did. Do you know anything about that?
Well, we both know that people get to vote once, but money gets to vote forever. So it wouldn't surprise me. And he has a lot of money, and he has a lot of supporters with a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked into exactly what his vote costs were getting into the governorship. But when you look at the numbers of how much he spent per delegate, In the states that he was able to get delegates, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah. Well, it's like Bloomberg, you know. I think it was $87 per vote or $93 per vote, something like that, versus the candidate running against him in the last election, $17 per vote.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's quite remarkable. Pulling a Brittany, the Reverend Ted Haggard is in the news.
Yes, I thought this was pretty interesting. I just, you know how I love the hypocrisy of evangelicals, but Ted Haggard, as you remember, was fired last year from his ministry when he got caught with crack and the hustler and
gay
all
hooker.
That. The gay hooker, exactly. Yeah. So he went into, off the bat, he went into a three-month rehab that he completed in a week and said that he was fine. And then his church said he could remain in the church if he underwent this, quote-unquote, spiritual restoration rehabilitation program. Mm-hmm. Basically, gay cure.
Yeah.
And so he went into Gay Cure, and they said this is going to take a few years, 10 years or so, but at the end you won't be gay anymore. You won't have these urges. Mm-hmm. And so that was a few months ago. That was last year. And yesterday he quit.
Hmm.
He bailed on Gay Cure rehab, and his church is very upset.
Hmm.
And they say it's quite premature, and they're cutting ties with him. They wish him well, but they want nothing to do with him now. So he's not out, but he's out of rehab.
You know, there have to be gay evangelicals.
Absolutely.
You know, just
the
log cabin Republicans.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, there's gay Republicans. There have to be gay evangelicals. Maybe here's an opportunity for a gay evangelical megachurch to start, and he can just get back into the megachurch business.
He's good at it. We'll see. I saw Jesus Camp. He's very good at leading the masses. So maybe this is his new calling.
I don't know.
He'd probably be a lot happier, I have to say that.
It will be interesting to see. The CIA torture tapes, we think we just learned that they were destroyed some time back. It turns out that we didn't know what we didn't know, as the Fireside Theater likes to say.
Exactly. You know, when those destroyed CIA tapes came out a couple months ago, it was, shock. You know, we didn't know. The president said he found out that day when it broke in the news, and everyone said that it was this big surprise. But now, the lead prosecutor in the case against Zacharias Moussaoui, he says that he knew about the CIA tapes more than a year ago.
Hmm.
And these were in these sealed court documents in which he talked about these tapes that just became unsealed this week and were leaked out to the AP. And in it, it shows that at least part of the government knew a year ago that this was going on.
That's
so
incredible.
All of the shock and horror and how could they that we saw a couple of weeks ago was all for show.
Yeah. And now also, apparently we have a secret torture prison at Guantanamo. I remember I was in Germany, I recall, in the early part of last year when, as I recall, the time these days is a giant fog for me, but whenever it was, when it was revealed that they were building a death chamber at Guantanamo, that they were building an execution room for those folks who got convicted and got the death sentence as a consequence of these military tribunals that they were going to hold. And I was in Europe at the time, and the screaming headlines were, you know, America builds death chamber at concentration camp Guantanamo.
Oh, man.
And I mean, it was just like, and I was in Germany at the time, and there was just such echoes, you know, it freaked people out.
Right. Well, obviously.
But now we're learning that not only is there, has Halliburton constructed a death chamber down there, I'm quite sure the construction is probably finished by now, but that there is a secret torture place down there.
Well, yeah, this is very interesting because you remember last year or so when the New York Times broke the story about all the secret holding spots, the black spots that we had over in Europe in different countries.
Right.
And there were these secret places you could hide prisoners away from the public, the Red Cross, human rights activists. You could just make them disappear for anybody but the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And they denied. And now it comes out that there is one of these secret prisons located at Guantanamo Bay. It's called Camp 7 because there are six camps there with different prisoners in them. This is Camp 7. It reportedly has 15 prisoners in it, and it's top secret. Even people in the military aren't allowed to know about this.
Hmm.
And one of the Rear Admiral Mark Busby finally confirmed that this secret prison did exist because reports of it would come out with some of the military tribunals of some of the suspects or some of the detainees down there. And people, there were rumors about this thing forever, but this is the first confirmation we have.
Interesting. By the way, another rumor flying around here at CPAC is that the, and apparently Politico has reported this as well, is that part of the reason why Romney pulled out when he did, the way he did, and how he did, was an attempt to unify the folks here, and the buzz is, please do not boo McCain when he gets up to speak.
Really?
Yeah, people are
being
asked.
So that's the whole plan.
People are being asked not to boo McCain.
Oh, my gosh.
I've had a bunch of these guys on, and I'm like, what are you guys going to do now? And they're like, well, you don't know. We're not sure.
See, they could join Ann Coulter and go support Hillary, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing. It's so funny because on our side, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, while neither one of them are, in my opinion, the world's ideal progressive, I mean, there's a whole lot of policy areas where I have differences with both of them. Frankly, they both have over 90% progressive voting scores, you know, by any of the various groups that rank them.
Right.
They're right on most of the issues, and the issues that they're not right on, to my mind, they're close. You know, they're pushable, they're movable.
Right.
Enough of us get active. John McCain, apparently, by being in favor of transparency for corporations and transnational corporations, and by being in favor of doing something about the problem of, you know, 10, 12, 15 million people in this country who are being exploited by employers, terrified, by criminal employers, frankly, by wanting to have, you know, clean and open elections. He just, you know, that's just not acceptable. I'm sorry.
We want shady and we want it now.
Right? That's
how dare you take away our shady candidates. Although I have to tell you, Tom, I sometimes give John McCain the benefit of the doubt. I consider him the best of all evils of the Republican side.
Well, that's the problem. I have had, you know, last night I was talking to somebody.
I'm mad at him today, though. I'm mad at him.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you see what he did with the stimulus package yesterday?
Yes, he didn't show up for the vote when the two guys traveling with him, Lieberman and what's his name from the former JAG officer.
Who was with him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about. Anyhow, they actually made the vote, but he didn't. He just intentionally wimped out on the vote.
Well, and he has been walking around talking about how important this stimulus package is. Now he's going to support it as soon as he gets to Washington.
Right.
He knows the Republicans don't want him to. So I just think he wussed out a little bit.
And then after the fact, he said he wouldn't have supported it.
And it failed by one vote. It failed by his vote.
Yeah.
And so, I woke up this morning and was like, all right, John, once again, I'm done with you. Yeah. I'm out.
Well, you know, I just last night read the piece in Newsweek. He was the cover story last week, I guess it was. Read the piece on him. And I was talking with a friend of mine who was talking about how one of her kids called up and said, you know, I'm thinking about voting for McCain. And she was like, what? You know, well, he seems like a straight-talking guy, and, you know, we need somebody like that. And he was, you know, they tortured him, and he went, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got this, he's going to be damn hard to beat. And I mean, you and I, and I think probably most of our listeners know of all the truly horrific positions he's taken. But it's all about perception, and his perception is
he's got a myth and a mystique, and it works for him.
There you go, yeah. Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Christy, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I hear the drums of war, they are changing. And everybody's getting in the groove. Laughing and dancing and talking and shouting and singing. We got nothing but love to prove. How about you? Everything's okay in the USA.
Yeah, we're making it better day by day. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And, you know, we've had a lot of questions. We're on the air on three different radio stations in Michigan, and over the last few months in particular, a lot of, in addition to radio stations all over the country, but we've had a lot of questions about what's the deal with the Michigan primary. Why was Hillary Clinton's name on the ballot and nobody else's? What's going to happen with these delegates or not delegates? How did this happen? Was this some sort of sneaky trick by the Clinton campaign, or was it incompetence and a screw-up on the part of the Obama and Edwards campaigns, for example, you know, taking their names off the ballot? What happened? What was the process? And so we said, let's talk to the source. Mark Brewer is the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. Their website, MichiganDems.com. And Mark's on the line with us. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I've got a lot of folks who are really confused, and I confess, as a Michigander myself, I was born and I grew up in Michigan, spent my first 27 years there, I think, and all, you know, my first radio career in Michigan. In fact, the first 10 years that I did radio was in Michigan. I don't understand this. I'm totally confused. What's going on?
Well, here's what happened in terms of the sequence of events going back to last summer. We indicated, as did the Republicans here, that we would support and would participate in a primary to be held in January 15th.
Right.
And so the legislature, on a bipartisan basis, passed the bill, which the governor promptly signed.
Now, if I may interrupt you, is the House or Senate in Michigan controlled by the Republican? Your governor is still Jennifer Granholm, isn't it?
Right. The House is Democratic. The Senate is Republican.
And your governor is a Democrat.
Democrat. So this took bipartisan agreement, cooperation to get it all done.
Okay.
And then under the law, the first step was for the Republican and Democratic Party chairs to put candidates' names on the ballot. And I submitted all 8 candidates for inclusion on the ballot.
Right.
So that's what the ballot is. Then under Michigan law, and this is a provision that's been in Michigan law for many, many decades, there is an option for candidates to withdraw by a certain date. And what happened then was 4 candidates, Senator Biden, Governor Richardson, Senator Obama, and former Senator Edwards, voluntarily withdrew their names from the ballot.
Now, they did that based on the assumption that everybody was going to voluntarily withdraw their names because that's what the national party asked them to do. Or am I missing something? Or is that what you asked them to do?
Yeah, I don't know if there was any kind of agreement or plan or coordination between the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly didn't ask them to do that. I mean, I put them all on the ballot, and I wanted them to stay on the ballot.
Oh, interesting.
What I'm told, what I've read in the paper about this, is that those 4 campaigns interpreted the pledge that they took, not to campaign in Michigan, as including removing their name from the ballot. And the Clinton campaign, again, based on what I've read in the paper, reached a different conclusion.
And the Kucinich campaign and a couple of others,
right,
Chris Dodd.
That's right. They interpreted their pledge differently. Senator Clinton never campaigned here. I mean, that was what the pledge they all took.
Right.
But these 4 voluntarily took the further step and pulled their name off the ballot. So any talk of a conspiracy by us to grease the skids for Senator Clinton and so forth is just wrong. I put all their names on. Those 4 candidates made a conscious strategic decision to take their names off.
Yeah, and presumably either thinking that it was the right thing to do or it'd get them good press or good PR or or on the assumption that everybody else was doing it, maybe they just weren't paying close attention or something.
Sure, whatever their
motivation. So, Mark, here's the second question then. The convention. Let's say that we go into the convention and Senators Clinton and Obama are still very, very close, and the thing that's going to make or break the candidacy of one or the other of them would be whether or not the delegates from Michigan get seated. And Senator Clinton got, as I recall, around 65% of the vote, didn't she, in Michigan, something like that?
She's going to end up with about 57% of our delegates.
Okay.
And the balance are going to go to uncommitted.
Okay. And so if those delegates get seated and that flips the race to her, my sense is that all hell's going to break loose in the Democratic Party. What's yours?
Well, I'm obviously concerned about that. But here's the political rally, and I've said this to the campaign. That if you do not seat the Michigan delegation and do not allow us to play us a role, you've basically written off Michigan in the fall campaign.
Which is a crime.
That's
a bigger political crime.
Which could cost them the election. And Michigan is a battleground. There's no formula for a Democrat winning the White House that doesn't include Michigan.
Right.
So, short term, you may have gained the nomination, but you gained nomination which will ultimately be fruitless because you're probably going to lose the general election.
Right. So the smart thing for Democrats to support would be to seat the Michigan delegation, understanding that 57% of the delegates are going to go for Hillary Clinton, the rest are going to go for whomever. They're uncommitted. And you know, hope that that's not the tiebreaker so that you guys don't get blamed for it, or blame is the wrong word probably. But
right. I mean, I've urged everybody to, you know, we need to try to figure this out and see if there's a solution that satisfies the two campaigns,
right,
the DNC and us here in Michigan, because it's
right
in our political self-interest.
Yeah, and Florida as well, by the
Florida
way.
Florida is in the same boat.
Same boat, yeah. Very, very interesting. And, you know, I really appreciate your clarifying all this for us, Mark.
My pleasure. There's been a lot of rumors and misinformation out there about this. We're trying to work through this and solve it in a way that wins in November. That's the ultimate goal here.
There you go. And we're all united on that. Mark Brewer, the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, MichiganDems.com, the website. And, Mark, thanks a lot for dropping by.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Conservative Political Action Conference. We will be back here tomorrow on Radio Row with more wacky conservatives to share with you and share their perspectives and some actually thoughtful ones as well. And your phone calls. And it's going to be an interesting day, so stick around or show up tomorrow. Same time, same place. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.